You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
After the Supreme Court affirmed a woman's constitutional right to privacy, including the right to choose, we shouldn't have to remind people that when it comes to a woman's health, no politician should get to decide what's best for you. No insurer should get to decide what kind of care that you get. The only person who should get to make decisions about your health is you. That's why we fought so hard to make health care reform a reality.
President Barack Obama speaking last Friday at the National Conference for Planned Parenthood in Washington, D.C., and I think it's fair to say that he had the meeting out of his hand. That this was the president's crowd. This is one of his most organized supporters, and he has been very good to them as well. Part of the reason he spoke to them was to segue into the subject of his national health care, the Affordable Health Care Act. He spoke a little bit about that, but he was also trying to get their support for the what he would call the continuing fight for a woman's right to choose. And in about 15 minutes of addressing Planned Parenthood, President Barack Obama did not use the word abortion once. Why? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in number as we respond to much of what the president had to say with Scott Klusendorf of Life Training Institute, 1-877-623-MY-IE. This entire hour responding to the president's address to Planned Parenthood on Friday, 1-877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Scott Klusendorf is a regular guest. He's president of Life Training Institute, and he's author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Scott, welcome back.
Good to be here, Todd.
You probably noticed as well in listening to the president's address that he did refer to abortion in different ways, but he never used the word. Why do you think that is?
Well, a couple of things, and it's not new. In one sense, the dynamics of this debate have not changed since the late 60s and early 70s, and that is, it's been necessary for those who favor elective abortion to shield the public from what's really going on. Now, lest anybody think I'm just making this up, I'm going to quote right now a very small portion of an editorial that appeared in California Medicine in 1970. This is a medical journal that editorializes in favor of abortion. And here's what they said back then, because I don't think a lot's changed, Todd. Here's what they write. Since the old ethic has not been fully displaced, it has been necessary to separate the idea of abortion from the idea of killing, which continues to be socially abhorrent. The result has been a curious avoidance of the scientific fact, which everyone really knows, that human life begins at conception and is continuous, whether intrauterine or extrauterine, until death. Now, check this out. The very considerable semantic gymnastics which are required to rationalize abortion as anything but taking a human life would be ludicrous if they were not often put forth under socially impeccable auspices. It is suggested that this schizophrenic sort of subterfuge is necessary because while the new ethic is being accepted, the old one has not yet been rejected. I don't think a lot's changed since 1970.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that those who support elective abortion have to stay as far away from the subject itself as possible?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk lately that abortion advocates are saying, so it is a baby, go ahead and kill it anyway. I've been telling people that is just another trial balloon. That is by no means the way they're going to go forward at this point in terms of their public relation campaign. They are going to minimize the act of abortion. They're going to call it health care. You heard the president refer to it as health care. You heard him refer to it as giving women the power to choose their own futures. But he never once talked about what the act of abortion was. He never once talked what its object was. And he never once gave an argument why the object of abortion deserved to die.
I got one other question. It's kind of contextual for the president, and I wonder how you might explain it. It's hard to ignore the fact that he gave this address to Planned Parenthood during probably one of the most high-profile trials of an abortionist that we've had in a long time,
right.
Kermit Gosnell. And, of course, I would think that the president and Planned Parenthood, and they did to a certain degree when the news finally made it into the mainstream media, want to say, you know, Gosnell's not what we're talking about. We don't support the Gosnells of this world. But that subject didn't come up either.
No, it didn't. But in reality, they indirectly do support him because Planned Parenthood opposes every single piece of legislation that would regulate clinics for safety, even for the women, never mind their children. So they, in a sense, do have something brewing there with Gosnell. They're going to distance themselves, of course, from him. But they oppose regulations that would make these clinics operate safer for the mothers.
Before we hear some more from the president, after you listened to him, what was his message to Planned Parenthood?
His message was not really to Planned Parenthood. The president was not speaking to them. He was speaking to the nation. And I happen to believe that his message resonated powerfully with the nation. I think this is a center-left country, that the idea struggle is being lost dramatically by pro-life conservatives because we have assumed for so long that there's a sleeping giant out there that's really with us on these issues if we could just activate them. I don't think there is a sleeping giant, Todd. I actually think the country, by and large, agrees with what the president said. And his message was simply this: let's trust women to make their own decisions. Let's not decide for them. Let's not have people have their lives ruined so that when they want to have kids and are able to have kids, they can do it. And then he cited the two women, the examples of the two women whose stories he related. Those stories, Todd, relate to the average American who hasn't thought through this issue. And if pro-life Christians don't get serious about arguing our case persuasively in the public square so that those stories are seen for what they are, I think we're going to continue to have problems here.
Here's the president, how he began his address to Planned Parenthood, speaking of the one core principle that has always been a part of Planned Parenthood's enterprise.
It's been nearly 100 years since the first health clinic of what later would become Planned Parenthood opened its doors to women in Brooklyn. And for nearly a century now, one core principle has guided everything all of you do: that women should be allowed to make their own decisions about their own health. It's a simple principle.
How do you respond to that, both his historical perspective and the one core principle?
Well, first of all, abortion isn't health care because pregnancy isn't a disease and unborn humans are not tumors. So the way that he tries to finesse this and talk away from the act that is really under consideration here is absolutely brilliant on his part. Keep the public in the dark about what we're really talking about. This is first-rate deception. Again, it's persuasive to uninformed people and those who are not engaged in the issue. His reply is also question begging. What if we were talking here about killing two-year-olds to promote the health of more mature people? Would anybody say, wow, we want women to have access to that kind of health care without any kind of government intrusion? Well, no. The only way this works is if we assume that the object of abortion is not one of us, and not once in his speech did the president make any attempt to make an argument that way.
If the president really wanted to talk a little history of Planned Parenthood, he probably could go to no better source than Margaret Sanger. What would he have found from...
Well, I'll tell you something he would have found that would have been interesting. In 1961, a Planned Parenthood brochure read as follows, quote, "An abortion ends the life of a baby after it's begun." And if he had dug even a little more further and looked at a previous Planned Parenthood convention, namely the one in San Diego in 1978, he would have seen Warren Hearn, the nation's leading abortionist, saying the following about his particular D&E abortion technique. Here's what Hearn told that conference. quote, "We have reached a point in this particular technology," meaning abortion technology, "where there's no possibility of denial of an act of destruction by the operator. It is before one's eyes. The sensations of dismemberment flow through the forceps like an electric current." Wow. That's a more honest Planned Parenthood speech. That's getting at what's really going on. What the president also would have discovered, I would hope, much to his dismay, is that Planned Parenthood very much in its early years and perhaps even today targeted minority districts and minority communities for sterilization, contraception distribution, and abortion to stop them from reproducing.
So there was, to put it mildly, eugenics, to put it more crassly, a racist bent.
I believe that case can be made very powerfully, and others have made it as well. Jonah Goldberg, in his book Liberal Fascism, has done an excellent job tracing the eugenics foundation to the American left. Others have traced that as well. Charles Donovan, in his book Blessed Are the Barren, and others have done very thorough scholarship showing Planned Parenthood targeting minorities. Margaret Sanger herself put together her Negro Project in hopes of getting black ministers to get their own people to agree to contraceptive use and sterilization where needed. So I don't think you have to dig real hard on this. Now, Planned Parenthood could come back and say, well, that's not what we do. We do not do that. We reject that. And they may try to come back with answers, but the historical record is kind of hard to dispute at this point.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest during this hour. On this Monday afternoon, April the 29th, we're responding to President Obama's speech given Friday at the Planned Parenthood National Conference. Scott is president of Life Training Institute and author of the book The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
My Peace, a Pentecost sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
It will look like suffering, like death, like the worst thing that could ever happen. But Jesus assures them, "It is my peace, and I give it to you."
And for any size donation during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of this sermon and a sermon preached by Todd on the first Pentecost. You can make a special Easter gift today at issuesetc.org. Thanks for keeping us in mind during the 50 days of Easter.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
When someone asks you, "What do you believe as a Christian?" how do you respond? Do you have a confession of faith? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, "I Believe." You can read it by subscribing to the Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Mark Hemingway answers the question, "Why Lutheranism?" with "Why Not?" Subscribe to the online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
You can't go.
President Barack Obama spoke to Planned Parenthood's National Conference on Friday, and we're responding to the president's speech with Scott Klusendorf on this Monday afternoon, April the 29th. He's president of Life Training Institute and author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You'll find a link to The Case for Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. The president went on in his speech to talk about politicians and, you know, it's always ironic when presidents talk about politicians of either party, but he talked about politicians who are against Planned Parenthood.
One in five women in this country has turned to Planned Parenthood for health care. One in five. And for many, Planned Parenthood is their primary source of health care. Not just for contraceptive care, but for life-saving preventive care, like cancer screenings and health counseling. So when politicians try to turn Planned Parenthood into a punching bag, they're not just talking about you, they're talking about the millions of women who you serve. And when they talk about cutting off your funding, let's be clear, they're talking about telling many of those women, you're on your own. They're talking about shutting those women out at a time when they may need it most, shutting off communities that need more health care options for women, not less.
We spoke earlier, Scott, about the president's brilliance in being able to kind of frame the issue. Is this another example?
Well, it is, and it's an outright lie. First of all, it was discovered last fall that Planned Parenthood wasn't doing these vast numbers of screenings to help women avoid breast cancer or cervical cancer. Their primary medical service is abortion. They perform over 300,000 of them a year. That's where they're making their money. And this idea that women are going to die if Planned Parenthood isn't there is a big joke. But again, it resonates with people because it strikes fear. There is, in many people's mind, this idea that if abortion is somehow curtailed at all, women are going to die in the streets by the millions. And our response as pro-lifers needs to be twofold. We need to acknowledge that any death from illegal abortion is a tragedy, and we mourn that death. We also need to point out that factually, this is not what happened in America before Roe v. Wade. It's also not what happened at the federal level in 1976 when the Hyde Amendment cut off federal funding for abortion services. Women did not die because they couldn't access free abortions using federal funds. We can point to solid empirical data to show that this bloodbath is a mere fear tactic they're using. But again, Todd, it does resonate with a lot of people. And I think one way we can respond to the president here in a general sense is to say, Mr. President, I agree with you completely. The government should not be involved in this personal decision between a woman and her doctor. We agree with you that abortion should be legal through all 9 months of pregnancy. And heck, and heck, while we're at it, we'll even agree with you that we shouldn't protect babies who survive the abortion procedures you want to keep legal. We agree that this decision should not see men or religious people imposing their views on others. We agree with you completely if what? If the unborn aren't human. And if, Mr. President, you can make that case, we will go away today. This isn't a debate, Todd, about those who are pro-choice and anti-choice, though Planned Parenthood wants to spin it this way. This is not a debate between those who want to curtail the freedom of women and those who want to expand it. No one at that Planned Parenthood conference, I trust, would say you can kill a 2-year-old in the name of trusting women to make their own personal decisions. But they do say you can do that with human fetuses. Why? Because they're assuming the unborn are not valuable human beings like the rest of us. They're not arguing for that. They're simply assuming it.
Now, one of the things the president said there sounded an awful lot to me like him saying, if you oppose abortion, then you oppose health care, all health care,
yeah,
for women.
Well, it didn't sound like that. That's exactly what he was saying. He was saying if you oppose what Planned Parenthood is doing, you want Planned Parenthood defunded, or you want to oppose the agenda of Planned Parenthood, then you are against women having quality health care. That's exactly what he's doing. You know what, Todd? When you're losing an argument because you don't have the facts on your side, the way you win it is to change your tactics, and you do a couple of things. Number one, you talk about your opponents wanting to turn back the clock. Oh, these people who are against Planned Parenthood want to send us back to the 1950s. The second thing you do on the heels of that immediately is to claim that your position is inevitable in terms of coming about. In other words, you can't stop the progress of time. Our side is going to win no matter what, and the enemies of our side had better just, pony up their tears because they're going to lose. The third thing you do is politicize the issue. You talk about this is simply a matter of people wanting to inject their political views into the freedom of others. And you ignore the moral question. You don't even go there. You just say it's a political issue. And then, of course, you cloud the issue by calling it health care instead of describing what the actual act is that we're talking about. And that's exactly what the president did. He did all four of those things.
Here is the president again. He turned from the issue of politicians using Planned Parenthood, his words, as a punching bag, to recent state laws that ought to concern Planned Parenthood.
So the fact is, after decades of progress, there's still those who want to turn back the clock to policies more suited to the 1950s than the 21st century. And they've been involved in an orchestrated and historic effort to roll back basic rights when it comes to women's health. 42 states have introduced laws that would ban or severely limit access to a woman's right to choose, laws that would make it harder for women to get the contraceptive care that they need, laws that would cut off access to cancer screenings and end educational programs that help prevent teen pregnancy. In North Dakota, they just passed a law that outlaws your right to choose starting as early as 6 weeks. Even if a woman's raped, a woman may not even know that she's pregnant at 6 weeks. In Mississippi, a ballot initiative was put forward that could not only have outlawed your right to choose, but could have had all sorts of other far-reaching consequences, like cutting off fertility treatments, making certain forms of contraception a crime. That's absurd. It's wrong. It's an assault on women's rights, and that's why when the people of Mississippi were given a chance to vote on that initiative, they turned it down. And Mississippi is a conservative state.
All right, I got a couple things here. First, Scott, you could write the president's speeches for him, because the outline you gave us before we heard that little soundbite was almost exactly what the president proceeded to say. I'm curious about a couple things. Is this more fear-mongering?
Yeah, of course it is. Look, there's not one pro-life law that's been proposed on the books that would cut off women getting cancer screening. That is just a outright lie. This man is a shameful disgrace for a commander-in-chief, and this is just one example of it. I would ask him to name one law that does that. Name one pro-life law that says women can't get cancer screening. Not one. There's not one out there. Now, it's true that defunding Planned Parenthood would give Planned Parenthood less abortion money to play with, but listen, there's no way you could make the claim that women are somehow going to then be cut off from using medical services that are widely available. Secondly, nowhere in these pro-life bills is it said women will be denied contraceptive use. Name one bill that is out there to outlaw contraceptive use. This is nothing but shameful fear-mongering. And that's what we have in the White House right now. We do not have a statesman. We have a guy who is a propagandist. And that's what they do. They use this fear-mongering. Now, the third thing you mentioned was the Mississippi bill. Interestingly enough, large numbers of pro-lifers oppose that bill because they viewed it as a flawed bill that, if it passed and was consequently struck down by the courts, would lead to further barriers to us getting protection for unborn children. So the president really isn't being honest about why that bill lost when close to 35% to 40% of all pro-lifers voted against it. Now, we're not here to debate whether their reasons were good or not, but he's not being honest in pointing out that Mississippi example.
Is the president and then his pro-life supporters there in the audience at Planned Parenthood's conference on Friday, is he trying to have it both ways, trying to give the impression that the country wants what Planned Parenthood wants, and then he has a long list of 42 states that have, in his own words, passed laws that would ban or severely curtail what Planned Parenthood. Which is it, Mr. President? About
yeah, he is. He is talking out both sides of his mouth here. But again, you don't have to worry about consistency when your primary mode of operation is fear-mongering. Now, I happen to believe that at the national level, the majority of Americans are more with the president than our side. The elections show that. You can't deny that, at least as far as the electoral map is concerned. He's got a majority. Now, when you start looking at individual states and you're talking about individual pieces of legislation that spell out specifically what we're going to regulate on the abortion procedure, you find that there is an increase in support for pro-life laws. For example, in most states, people think that the taxpayer shouldn't have to pay for abortions at the state level. You also have widespread agreement that parents should have some say in a young child's decision. It's absurd that a kid can go to school and they can't buy a Coke at school without parental consent, but they can go get an abortion behind their parents' back and the parents aren't even told.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest. When we come back, we'll respond to more of what the president had to say at the National Conference of Planned Parenthood last Friday.
The Church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Issues, etc. What does this mean? We want to hear from you. Why do you listen? How has it helped you? What are your favorite topics? Who are your favorite guests? And what makes Issues, etc. unique? Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues, etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Issues, etc. What does this mean? 618-223-8382.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us and encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
What war?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Former Susan G. Komen Foundation Vice President Karen Handel has written an important new book. It details Komen's highly publicized decision to stop funding Planned Parenthood, which it later rescinded amid a media firestorm. Entitled Planned Bullyhood, Handel's book makes one point clear. The Komen versus Planned Parenthood episode was a calculated battle instigated by the abortion giant as a tactic in the War on Women strategy. This war is a constructed storyline that says anyone who questions taxpayer-funded abortion on demand must not really care about women. Pro-lifers must push back against this erroneous claim.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Somewhere there's a woman who just received a new lease on life because of a screening that you provided that helped catch her cancer in time. Somewhere there's a woman who's breathing easier today because of the support and counseling she got at her local Planned Parenthood health clinic. Somewhere there's a young woman starting a career who, because of you, is able to decide for herself when she wants to start a family.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're responding what the president had to say Friday as he spoke to Planned Parenthood's national conference. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. I invite your questions and your comments. We are coming to you live this Monday afternoon, April the 29th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Scott, in the bump coming out there, we heard the president kind of giving three examples of women who are better off because of what Planned Parenthood has been able to do for women over the last 40 years or so. What's your general response there?
Well, notice again the question-begging nature of the president's response. When we call something question-begging, what we mean is it assumes something it's trying to prove. It doesn't argue for it, it simply assumes it. And in this case, the assumption is that the unborn aren't human. And listen to what he said. Someplace there is a woman who can now decide when to start a family. Now, wait a minute. If a woman is pregnant and she has an abortion, that is not a decision of when to start a family. She has already started a family. The only question is, what is she going to do with the offspring that are the result of that family beginning? And notice the president assumes that she doesn't really have a child until, I guess, sometime after birth. He isn't arguing for that. He's just assuming it. On a tactical note, I'm beginning to wonder, Todd, if it might be wise for pro-lifers, every time the president brings up this story of, oh, somewhere there's a woman who isn't dying of cancer because she got free screening at Planned Parenthood. I'm wondering if, in addition to pointing out that Planned Parenthood is not doing these screenings to the level they claim, we ought to just call their bluffs and say, okay, listen, Planned Parenthood, you agree to stop doing all abortions. You agree to stop referring for abortion, and we will drop our campaign to have you defunded so that you can devote your time and resources exclusively to saving women from cancer. Do you think Planned Parenthood's going to take that deal?
I don't think so, but
no.
But why wouldn't they? You mentioned before that abortion is their primary business.
Yeah. Their annual report bears that out. You don't need to take my word for it. Just go pull their annual report. And you can see the number of abortions they're doing. You can compare how many abortions they've done one year versus another, what their income was from doing these abortions. You know, the numbers don't lie. The president can say what he wants, but the numbers are there.
Next, the president turned to an issue, more general praise for Planned Parenthood and its relationship to the American woman.
We've got to spread the word. We need all college students who come through your doors to call up their friends and post on Facebook talking about the protections and benefits that are kicking in. And you are all in a unique position to deliver that message because the women you serve know you and they trust you. And the reason for that is that you haven't let them down before.
Is this true? The president actually repeated that several times, that Planned Parenthood does not let women down.
Well, in this particular part of the speech, the president was referencing the provisions of Obamacare that are beginning to kick in. And he was asking Planned Parenthood to get the word out about those provisions. But to the specific question you bring up, has Planned Parenthood let women down? I suppose that depends on which women we're talking about, born or unborn. I certainly don't think Planned Parenthood's surgical procedures have benefited unborn women. But even for those that are the ones procuring these abortions, a case could be made that they are not being well taken care of. I want to be careful here, Todd, and not do what some pro-lifers do, and that is to claim that surgical abortion is risky, that women are dying in large numbers from it. That's simply not true, and I don't think that's the way for pro-lifers to make their case. Sure, there's some risk associated with abortion, as all other surgical procedures, but that's not a case I think we can make. What we can say is this, that there are women who, by their own profession, have felt that their abortions were far more harmful to them than they thought they would be at the time. And that's why you have pregnancy centers offering post-abortion ministry to men and women who've experienced abortion, men who encouraged women to abort, women who made that choice because they didn't think they had another way out. So certainly at the subjective level, there would be those who say Planned Parenthood has let me down.
There are certainly women who have gone in and said, I want this abortion, give it to me now. But yeah. In speaking to post-abortive women who have kind of seen the light on it a little too late, they have often said it was the pressure of the parents, it was the pressure of the boyfriend or of the husband or of a whole family that essentially pushed them into Planned Parenthood's arms.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt about that. The anecdotal evidence, and I think even some empirical evidence, points to the fact that a lot of women make this decision because they feel totally unsupported by the key people around them, the boyfriend involved, the parents, and others who could have played a role dissuading her from killing her own child, but instead they pressured her to abort. I think that goes without saying. What I do think we want to do, though, as pro-lifers, is make sure that the primary thing we're focusing on with abortion is the moral question, does elective abortion intentionally kill an innocent human being? If the answer to that is yes, then that needs to be our main focal point, and it's fine to talk about how it impacts women subjectively as a secondary concern, but it should never be our primary one.
Your general thoughts, because the president devoted a few minutes of his speech talking about the Affordable Care Act, popularly called Obamacare. What are your general thoughts there on that major piece of legislation and kind of the overhaul of America's healthcare system with respect to the life issue?
Well, it appears to me, and from what I have read of the bill and by those I trust who have legal expertise and have reviewed it, that Obamacare allows for the funding of abortion. We already know that the HHS mandate is going to require religious organizations to purchase insurance that will fund abortifacient drugs like Ella and RU-46. So we already know that provisions of the new healthcare system that we have in place are not going to be friendly to the pro-life cause or unborn humans in general. That's profoundly disturbing. And then there's the other fact that we are taking the world's best healthcare system and we are retooling it in a way that I can't imagine would not result in rationing of care, a reduction of quality of care. And people have raised these red flags. And already we're seeing, for example, in California, people who are not wealthy are seeing their insurance premiums go through the roof since this thing passed. So already we're seeing the detrimental effects of it. The president is saying we need to get the word out about this. Part of the reason I think he's saying that is I'm convinced that in the next year or so, the public's going to get a look at what this monstrosity of legislation has brought on them, and there may be some buyer's remorse.
I have often wondered when the debate over the Affordable Care Act was raging, whether or not the president could have scored a coup. And this is my cynical political view coming through by saying, look, what I'm going to toss in there to get some conservative support is increased regulation on abortion clinics, the same kind of medical regulation that we would see for any other kind of clinic, surgical clinic. And the pro-choicers may not like that, but it'll improve our healthcare system. What would Planned Parenthood have thought about the president suggesting tighter regulation on their industry?
Well, on one hand, They're going to oppose that because historically they have always opposed tighter regulation on controls that allegedly make clinics more safe. Of course, safe for the mother, never safe for the child. On the other hand, what's interesting about that is you are absolutely right. He could have said that and it wouldn't have had any impact whatsoever on abortion being funded through this Affordable Care Act. And here's why I think I'm right about this. While the president can say that he is putting forth legislation that has tighter control over clinics, the federal courts ultimately have the say over what pieces of legislation will stand. And it's clear from the Casey decision that if the courts interpret those regulations as an undue burden on the mother seeking an abortion, that they will strike them down. And I'm sure the administration could publicly say, look, we're campaigning here for stricter control, and then in the back room they're petitioning the court to make sure that it's struck down under undue burden. So I think that would have been a coup.
When we come back, we're going to spend another 10 minutes with Scott Klusendorf, a little bit more to respond to from the president's speech Friday at Planned Parenthood's National Conference. It's Monday afternoon, April the 29th. We're coming to you live. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute, and he's author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture.
You can meet Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Alvin Schmidt Saturday morning, May the 4th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Schmidt will be signing his new book, The American Muhammad, from 10 to 11 Saturday morning at Lober Hall on the campus of Concordia Seminary. You'll get 30% off the book price, and Concordia Publishing House will provide free donuts and coffee. A book signing for The American Muhammad from 10 to 11 Saturday morning, May the 4th at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.
Islam, worship, feminism, pietism, postmodernism. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14 and 15 in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The Gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the Gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan gathers to receive our Lord's gifts in Word, Baptism, and Supper every Sunday morning at 9:15. Bible study at 11. Join us at 4219 Park Lane in Door, or visit us on the web, epiphanydoor.org. Christ-centered, cross-focused, historic, confessional, liturgical. Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan. epiphanydoor.org. 616-681-0791.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're responding to the president's comments made Friday at the Planned Parenthood Conference in Washington, D.C. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. Coming up this Saturday, is May 4th this Saturday? Yes, it is. At 10 a.m., for about an hour there at Concordia Seminary in Lober Hall, you can meet the Reverend Dr. Alvin Schmidt. He's author of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April, called The American Muhammad, Joseph Smith, Founder of Mormonism. Your chance for a little Q&A there to meet him personally. There are free donuts and coffee and a significant discount on the price of the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April, the American Mohammed. It's this Saturday, May the 4th. You can meet Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of The American Mohammed, at Concordia Seminary, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, Saturday morning. So let's turn to the way that the president ended the Stemwinder, speaking in Washington, D.C., to the annual and national conference of Planned Parenthood. This is how the president decided to say farewell to Planned Parenthood, essentially saying, we're not going anyplace.
So every day, in every state, in every center that Planned Parenthood operates, there's stories like those. Lives you've saved, women you've empowered, families that you've strengthened. That's why no matter how great the challenge, no matter how fierce the opposition, there's one thing the past few years have shown. It's that Planned Parenthood is not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere today. It's not going anywhere tomorrow. As long as we've got a fight to make sure women have access to quality, affordable health care, and as long as we've got to fight to protect a woman's right to make her own choices about her own health, I want you to know that you've also got a president who's going to be right there with you, fighting every step of the way. Thank you, Planned Parenthood. God bless you. God bless America. Thank you.
All right, that's how the president ended the speech. What's your general reaction there, Scott?
At the end of that speech, Barack Obama was not talking to abortion advocates. He was talking to pro-lifers. He was telling pro-lifers, you are not going to win. We will be here forever. Take your marbles and go home. This thing is over. And what you got to understand, Todd, the pro-abortion movement from day one has been trying to declare that the debate is over. And their goal has been not to engage the debate, but to say it's not even an issue, just get over this, you're going to have to live with it. Well, I'm sorry, we are not going away. Yes, the chips are down. Yes, the odds against us are amazingly discouraging at times. Yes, the enemy is well-funded and well-organized. I understand all of that, but Todd, I'm sorry, surrender's not an option. I'm not quitting, and any pro-life Christian listening to me right now, I have something to say to you. You are not allowed to surrender. You are a Spitfire pilot. The Spitfires saved the West in 1940 in the Battle of Britain, that plane that the British used to shoot down the enemy aircraft above its own territory. That plane was amazing, and the pilots who flew them were outnumbered 3-1, but they put on their flight jackets and they went into battle, and that's what we've got to do. We have got to fight. Surrender's not an option, and we're going to keep at this thing, and Barack Obama was trying to tell us that we can't win. I'm sorry, I don't accept that thesis.
The one phrase in his closing there that stood out to me in praise of Planned Parenthood is, the lives you've saved.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts there?
Which lives? Notice the question begging claim again. Planned Parenthood certainly hasn't saved the lives of unborn humans. In fact, I looked up their annual report during the last break. Last year, they killed 333,964 unborn humans. That's an unborn human that's killed by Planned Parenthood once every 94 seconds. Come on. That's just not something that they can brag about being lifesavers unless they assume that the children they're killing are not human.
You said before that a rather bleak picture, in spite of your words of encouragement a moment ago, a rather bleak picture of how how you think the debate is going. This is very important. You've repeated it several times, but it bears repeating here at the end. What is the central issue here that we cannot allow the subject to be turned from, that we must continue to hammer home every time the subject comes up?
What is the unborn? Listen, Todd, if abortion does not intentionally kill an innocent human being, I'm not the only pro-lifer who will drop this fight immediately. But if it does take the life of an innocent human being without justification, there's no way Christians can drop this fight. And I know it's discouraging for some of our listeners to hear authors like Donald Miller, even my own college pastor who campaigned for Obama, justified his vote for Obama, said abortion is just one of many issues out there. We shouldn't treat it as any other sin. The kind of discouraging news that we're getting from our own people, who we should be able to look to for leadership, can be downright discouraging to us. But I'm sorry, we're not quitting. And everybody needs to put on their flight jacket. Everybody's got to stiffen their spine. And we're going to fight this thing through because faithfulness demands it. And the issue we're going to focus on like a laser beam is, what is the unborn?
A few minutes ago, we mentioned in passing the murder trial of Kermit Gosnell, Philadelphia abortionist.
Mm-hmm.
Closing arguments were heard today in that trial in Philadelphia. He was charged with multiple counts of murder. What are your thoughts on this story?
I think this story, as terrible as it is similar to what happened with partial birth abortion in the mid-90s. And that is, it becomes a teachable moment. And this is where we pray as believers that God uses something that is horrific and awful to open the minds of the American public. And here's the question I hope the public will begin to ask. What essential difference is there between those humans that Gosnell killed after birth and those he killed before? And I hope they will come to the conclusion that when you stop to think about it, differences of size and level of development and where you're located are not good reasons for saying you can be killed before birth but not after.
Do you worry that the result of something like this, the Gosnell trial, irrespective of its verdict, will say, well, to the average American, I'm obviously against that kind of stuff, and maybe partial birth abortion too, but move further into the womb and further earlier in gestation, and I have a harder time opposing it?
I think some will do that. The question is, can we sway enough to get a majority to our view if these types of news stories reawaken in them their moral compass? Look, once someone admits, and Hadley Arkus makes a good point of this, he says, once someone admits that the child in the womb is a real thing, a real living being, that puts in place a premise that allows us to advance the pro-life argument further with that person. And that's progress by any measure. So I'm hopeful that this case puts a premise into the minds of people where they start going, wait a minute, that child in the womb is a real thing, and if we shouldn't be killing him after birth, what reasons are we giving for saying you can kill him before?
You said earlier that you thought that the small minority of pro-choicers who say, yeah, it's a baby, so what, are not representative of the general direction that the pro-choice movement is headed. Do you think we expect to hear just more of the same? About a minute here.
I will back up my claim by pointing to the president's remarks. Notice he didn't even talk about abortion. There's a reason for that. His pollsters and Planned Parenthood's pollsters know that if they come out and say, it's a baby, kill it anyway, the public will vomit. They know that. And so they're not going there. Your academics like Peter Singer and others are going to talk about this in hopes of putting a premise in the minds of people that we shouldn't worry about the issue at all. But I think we're decades away from that taking a foothold, and we as pro-lifers ought to be able to hold the line on that point.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. He's author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You can find out more about Life Training Institute and Scott's book under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Scott, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd. Always good to be with you.
Folks, you can help us defend life from beginning to end by making a tax-deductible gift to support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. Now, you can make a secure online donation at our website, issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues, etc. and send it to Issues, etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Here's the address again. Issues, etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Now, for any size gift before Pentecost Sunday, that's the 19th of May, we'll send you a recording of two sermons that I preached, one on the Ascension of Christ and the other on the Day of Pentecost. Thanks for listening, and thanks for helping us defend life from beginning to end. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., we'll talk with Pastor Tom Baker about the Lord's Prayer, and we'll also discuss John 16, beginning at verse 23, where Jesus says, "I have overcome the world." What does he mean? We'll discuss that with our pastor's roundtable, including Pastor Jeff Hemmer, tomorrow on Issues, Etc. Now, even if we knew that we were going to lose and keep losing and keep losing and keep losing, we still can't give up. We absolutely can't. We have no choice but to defend the unborn. So, regardless of where the arguments on the other side go, regardless of how many euphemisms they employ to hide what it is they actually are supporting, the killing of the unborn, regardless of how powerful their spokesman may be, and you don't get more powerful than the President of the United States, Scott's right. We fight on. We fight in defense of the defenseless, in defense of the unborn. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shop.logia.org. Shop.logia.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shop.logia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shop.logia.org.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.